Okay, let's go ahead and convene. It is
recording in progress.
For the Finance Committee of the City of San Leandro City Council to order. Today's Wednesday, May 28th. And I so appreciate it. Madam Clerk, if you can take attendance.
Thank you, Mayor. Councilmember Viveros Walton is absent. Councilmember Aguilar?
Present.
Thank you. And Mayor Gonzalez?
Present.
Thank you.
Okay, so the record reflects that Councilmember Aguilar is present as well, in case he wasn't mic'd. So if you would make your announcement, Madam Clerk.
After each agenda item is presented, the mayor will ask for committee member comments and then take public comment. You will have 2 minutes for your comment. A countdown timer will appear for the convenience of the speaker and attendees.
Okay, at this point in time, we're going to move to our discussion item. This is in regards to development impact fees. We've got Assistant Community Development Director Alan Schultz presenting this item. Welcome.
Hello. Good afternoon. Let's make sure you can see the presentation. Okay. And I hope that's not my 2 minute timer, because it definitely be longer than that. Okay, so we're here today to talk about development impact fees. We're going to go over the background and our approach to this topic, the different fee categories that were studied, the methodology we used to approach this item, a really important factor, which is market feasibility, and then some considerations and examples for the committee's review, and then we'd love to get your feedback on this before it proceeds to council. So the approach for this item is really a balancing act. We need to look at balancing between legally defensible fees and what's market feasible. And in doing that, we're looking to maximize revenue that can help fund necessary infrastructure while also enabling development to occur. And so to do this, we've had multiple consultants help us with this very technical topic, including NBS, who really worked on the Nexus study of defensible fees, and then Bay Area Economics, who did the market feasibility assessment for San Leandro. And then this is an item that implements the housing element. The state requires that cities address the housing crisis by looking at issues that could prevent development, housing development in particular, and fees is an item that came up as a governmental constraint for San Leandro. So we pledged to look at our fees and to look at ways to incentivize all housing development, and particularly affordable housing development, per the state. And so the fee categories that we looked at include reevaluating our park development fee. That is the largest fee we charge residential development. And we also evaluated several new fee types given our major capital needs. So we know that we have aging facilities. We need to plan for new facilities, expanded facilities. So we looked at community and recreation centers, library facilities, fire protection facilities, police facilities, and general government, like City Hall and the Corporation Yard. And then we did not reevaluate our streets and signals fees, known as DFSI, which is charged to both residential and non-residential development. That fee will be studied once our streets plans are updated. And so we have an older streets document, and it wouldn't make sense to reevaluate those fees at this time. And to go over the methodology, when you look at development impact fees, it's really critical that those can only fund facilities that are necessary to serve new development. You can't look at your city-wide needs and think like, great, we can charge new development to pay for these facilities or infrastructure that the existing residents need. That's not considered fair or legal. And so there has to be a nexus to the fees offsetting the impact that the new development itself creates proportionally. And so in order to do this, we're really looking at the cost of our planned facilities that would serve new development, and then we're dividing that by our projected new development, which would create the demand for those additional services facilities. And the existing, what we call service levels for our existing community members, those are applied to the new development. So we're not having status quo for our existing residents and then saying, oh, but we're going to have, you know, the five-star version for the new developments. So we're going to charge them really high fees for that additional service level. You have to extrapolate your current service level to the new population. And then we get to the feasibility analysis. And so we hired area economics to look at what types of development have feasibility challenges in San Leandro. And they looked at 10 different development prototypes, and they basically did pro forma models, and they looked at development feasibility in terms of residual land value. So once you look at all of your soft costs, you get your project developed, or designed, I should say, and then you move into construction and all your hard costs, the residual land value tells you if there's value for that proposal. And in San Leandro, they evaluated the following development types in blue on the bottom of the screen, a variety of non-residential types as well as residential types. And what BAE found is not a surprise to me as someone who works in community development and sees the trends of what's getting built. What they found is that for residential, for-sale townhomes are the only feasible residential category in current market conditions. Market rate multifamily has feasibility challenges. And so affordable multifamily has even more significant feasibility challenges, which is why, with the exception of the one market rate residential project that's about to be occupied, we are not seeing developers pulling permits and moving into construction for those development types. We have seen some sustained interest for for sale townhomes. And that tends to do with just the input factors for that product type. They tend to be more affordable to construct, and they have a healthy sales price, given the regional sales prices, and so there's still a profit to be made for that particular product type, whereas there is not a strong market for the other types of residential. ADUs, accessory dwelling units, tend not to be based on market factors. They're more about family need, equity in your primary dwelling. So those are a little bit unique compared to these other residential types. And then for the office, retail, hotel, and medical office development, BAE found that those face significant feasibility challenges in this current market, mostly having to do with interest rates and the terms with which lenders are willing to give for development projects. There's just a lot of uncertainty in the markets right now, and projects are not, quote unquote, penciling. Industrial developments, like the types of new warehouses that we're seeing going up, those are still marginally feasible in the current market. So I think that this is helpful to have validated by Bay Area Economics through the pro forma analysis, but it also tracks really well with our experience here in San Leandro of what's going into construction. And so we did want to, you know, add the caveat that new development can still occur if there are special factors with a project that, you know, is the financing available to a developer. So there might still be exceptions to these rules. So we still have some hope, but this is a key part of what we're doing in community development, is working closely with all of the developers in our pipeline to understand those special circumstances and what access to capital they have. So BAE recommended that when we look at what's legally defensible in terms of impact fees, we really take it with a grain of salt, because what's market feasible is far, far less than what's legally defensible. And so for market feasibility, they're recommending that the fees that the city charges developers do not exceed 7 to 10% of the total development costs. And of course, those development costs vary by product type. And that our current fees place us more close to the 8 to 11% range, which is actually a little above the recommended 7 to 10%. And so with the full fees that NBS had evaluated legally defensible, those would significantly add and put us out of the market feasible range. So we've got what we could legally defend versus what's actually feasible for development in this market. And so just to kind of give us a little bit of facts and information here, over the last 10 years, we've seen a total of 793 units constructed. Largely, those are ADUs and some affordable projects that are very notable. Maria Alta, Laura Landing, and now Central Kellen, our market rate mixed use project in the downtown. And then when we look at the park and Lufi revenue that we've received over the decade, it follows a very similar trend. And we've received approximately $9.2 million in park fees over the decade that we're looking at here, with a huge infusion from the project that I noted. And I did want to note that the development impact fees are typically collected when a project pulls building permits. So we have thousands of units approved through our entitlement pipeline, but it's not until they move into the construction phase that they pay fees. And there are even newer laws that allow developers to pay fees at time of occupancy versus right at building permit issuance. And so next I want to bring your attention to just some trade-offs and some considerations. San Leandro received pro housing designation from HCD. So as a pro housing city, we have streamlined a lot of our processes to help enable residential development. And we think residential development is beneficial for a number of reasons, but here are some of the highlights. So there are one-time revenues that the city receives up front when projects go into construction through permits and development impact fees. And then there are the ongoing benefits of increased property taxes. And that is something just, we'll show some examples, but just something to keep in mind. That these one-time fee payments can be significant, but the ongoing benefit of having new households and improved property values can also be a significant source of revenue for the city over time. Of course, we want housing at all levels to offer diverse housing choices and to attract new households to the community. And then there's the multiplier effect, where those households go out and they spend money in the community and add value in other ways to the community. But since this is the finance committee, I'm focusing more on the finance side of things. And so I think as the committee and the council look at impact fees, it's really critical to understand the balance to maximize revenue, but also that that revenue is only realized if development can happen. So if you set fees really high with the idea of you're going to get tons of, you know, fee revenue, and then development is infeasible and no one builds, A, you don't get those fees, those impact fees, those one-time fees, and then B, you don't get those ongoing fees, right? So there might be an idea in which we want to right-size our fees to enable development to occur in a more feasible environment so that we can get the long-term benefits of having development in the city. And so there are lots of factors when developers are looking where to build and whether they can build, and fees are just one piece of the equation. Interest rates and, you know, the terms in which they're borrowing is of course a huge factor. So I don't want to give a false impression that if we were to even eliminate our fees, like all of a sudden a bunch of development would occur. It's not that simple. So it's definitely trade-offs, balancing act. It's not a one-size-fits-all solution. Some examples of the ongoing revenue to just look at here. Maple Lane was our 39-unit townhouse development that's fully occupied. The property tax basis went up about $65,000 per year as a result of that development at last check. And then Central Catalan, the former CBS site, the property tax base increased about $38,000 per year, and that project's not even fully occupied yet, so I'm anticipating that number will increase. But we just want to kind of bring some numbers into focus for the committee. And so, with all of that in mind, staff is recommending that we do seek to balance our infrastructure funding needs with market feasibility, and we are recommending at this time that we only move forward with revising our park impact fee. That's the major fee we collect on residential development. And what we've seen is that the market conditions are not supportive of adding new fees on top of our existing fees. We also don't think it's prudent to divvy up the amount we can collect into several small pots that are highly regulated. So if we said we want a library fee, and we want a fire department fee, and we want a police fee, and we ended up with little small amounts of money that we can only spend in highly regulated ways on capital, not maintenance, we think that would be challenging, and there's a lot of reporting requirements, and it would kind of dilute the power that those fees could have if we keep them concentrated right now like we have in parks and streets. So that's why we're not suggesting moving forward with new fee categories in this current market. And then there is some nuance to the park fee because it's a two-part fee. It's land acquisition and improvements. And looking at the park master plan, we think it's likely we're going to want to invest in our existing parks more than we're going to be wanting to acquire significant amounts of new parkland over the next 5 to 10 years. And so we were recommending restructuring the fee so that the bulk of the funds we receive go towards those improvements and not parkland acquisition. Acquisition is still important, so we're proposing a 75-25% split and looking for input on that. And then I'll talk briefly about a new public art program and a proposed fee waiver program. And then just wanting to emphasize here that this is not a forever decision. This is based on current market factors, and we can always reevaluate fees as market conditions change. And we have the NBS Nexus study that basically sets the legally defensible fees quite high, so we can always ratchet that up if market conditions change. So the proposed park fees are shown here in the second table. They align with AB602's requirement to structure the fees by square footage versus just a plain unit fee. And what we've seen is that the development trends have changed significantly in the 20 years since our park fees were last updated, substantially. Now we're seeing developers look more at smaller units like studios and one bedrooms, which have a lower impact on our parks than a larger unit would that can accommodate a household with, let's say, three bedrooms. And so these new fees would be tiered based on square footage ranges, and the fees would fluctuate as a result. And so for your kind of average, larger units, the fees that we're proposing would align with today's rate for multifamily, which is about $18,000. But for the really small units, the fee would be substantially less, like a third of the current multifamily fee. So you're going to see some big swings on the next slide I show you. So this is a sample project comparison. I took five projects that have actually been approved or constructed in San Leandro recently, and I evaluated what the fee would be for that project under our current fees, what it would be under the proposed fees, and then compared the same project fees to Alameda, Hayward, and Dublin. And so the project on the left is very staggering. That changed from $9 million down to $2.5 million. And that is a project with 500 units that are mostly studios. And so you can see that the $9 million fee that was calculated under the old framework, assuming every multifamily unit could accommodate several people and it was a standard size, is very different from equating the fee with the smaller unit structure. The proposed fee puts us more in line with our competitor cities, and it's still above, like, for example, the city of Alameda, where they would charge the comparable project. So this is just a check to kind of show you where our fees were stacking up with our competitors or our comparison cities and where the proposed fees would put us. In general, it would reduce fees for rental projects that have smaller units, and it would slightly increase fees for townhouse-type projects that tend to have more bedrooms, more square footage. So that's the proposed result of this change in fee structure. And then this table just shows the actual numbers that are feeding that chart and some of the details. And then I'll move forward to talk about the public art program. While not a fee per se, we've heard from the community, we've heard from council in the past, you know, why does San Leandro not have an obligation for developers to provide public art? And that obligation can often be satisfied through an in-lieu fee. If the developer doesn't provide it on-site, they can pay a fee that gets pooled for public art citywide. A lot of cities have these requirements, and they can add to some really lovely improvements within those cities, but we do want to be mindful of the feasibility. And so, if council's interested, we think that there is feasibility to establish a public art program utilizing these recommendations that we have for you with the park fees. I don't want to pit parks and art against one another, but if the park fees are more right-sized, there's more market feasibility for other investments like public art. If the council wants to increase, you know, go to a higher park fee, we have to revisit whether the public art program would be market feasible. So I just wanted to, you know, make sure that we're looking at the whole of what we're asking developers to pay for, not just looking item by item and trying to maximize each one, because that can end up with some major feasibility challenges. And so if there's interest, we will continue to work on this, and we could develop a public art requirement that includes an in-lieu fee option. Lastly, I just wanted to talk about the idea of a fee waiver program. This came up in the housing element, and Bay Area Economics compared several similar cities and found that there are a variety of ways to offer waivers for affordable housing developments. Hayward, our neighbor, offers 100% reduction for parking impact fees, but only for qualified nonprofit affordable projects. For for-profit projects, they offer a 50% reduction. And for inclusionary units that are provided, let's say it's a market rate project that has to provide 15% inclusionary on site, they would receive a 50% discount on the park fee for those 15% of units. And that is what we are proposing for San Leandro. So as you can see, the current fees vary by unit type, and we're proposing for you to consider, we're just looking for feedback here, but community development is looking to maximize housing development and feels that if we offered 100% waiver for the nonprofit developers, it would go a long way. And instead of the city needing to invest funds into those projects to make them pencil, foregoing the fees can be a really meaningful way to help, you know, help the performa and all the capital stack that you're looking at. For for-profit and inclusionary units, we are looking to align with Hayward and proposing a 50% reduction. We've heard from developers that meeting our 15% inclusionary requirement is very, you know, at this point, pretty infeasible in the market. And so by reducing the fees for those inclusionary units, we're hoping to help incentivize production. For ADUs, state law says that we cannot charge any fees under 750 square feet. And for ADUs over 750 square feet, we need to charge proportional fees to what would be required for a single family home. We can continue to do that. We see about 10 to 13 of these units per year, and they would be paying the DFSI fees and a park impact fee. We're proposing to just help incentivize production and more housing and, you know, increase property values in the community that the council consider waiving those fees. Even though they legally could charge them and continue to charge them, we're proposing that we forego them in order to incentivize production of ADUs. And so we are seeking feedback on all three of these items today: the updated park fee structure, the public art program, if we want to move forward with exploring that and looking at that kind of ordinance, and then this idea of offering a fee waiver. And I'm available to answer any questions, and then hopefully we have our consultants from NDS on the line if there are any really technical questions about the Nexus study. Thank you.
At this point in time, we're going to have some questions, and after we're done with some clarifying questions, we'll have a little comment and then come back for a discussion.
Thank you, Avalon, for the presentation. I mean, this is a lot to soak in with, you know, the recommendations and what have you on this. With regards to some of, we have many approved projects in the pipeline. Are any of these current, you know, what our requirements are hindering development in San Leandro, or is the current market like the Maximus project on Alvarado?
I can say that the market conditions are the main cause of development not moving into construction. This is not going to move the needle enough at this point to result in those becoming feasible projects. But if these new fees are adopted, I think it could move the needle for some of the affordable projects. And I think we could see the needle moved quicker than if the fees remain, you know, kind of at the current level, if that makes sense.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. I think it helps us. It definitely helps us, and it demonstrates a commitment to being a city where development can be feasible.
Gotcha. And the recommendation with the public art program, how would that be vetted? We get the funds, would that go through the Library and Arts Commission, Cultural Commission?
That's a standard practice, is that there's a body who reviews the type of art and the placement on site and needs to okay it before it's installed. And the ordinance could also address certain situations where the in-lieu fee option would be available, and whether that's at the developer's discretion or the city's discretion. For example, you know, if there's a project and it's not in a highly visible area and we'd rather get the fees so we could do art somewhere that would be enjoyed by the community more fully, that's something we could outline in the ordinance if the council wants to go that direction.
Thank you. Those are my questions for now.
A couple of other questions for me. The notion of fees for operations versus land acquisition on parks. Is the motivation that we need operating funds right now? Like, how did we get there? Because if I remember correctly, the parks study told us that we may be short on park land. So I'm trying to reconcile those two things. Any insights would be appreciated.
Yeah. And I want to clarify, it's not operations, it's capital improvements at existing city parks. So making them more attractive to community members, replacing equipment, restroom facilities,
okay.
Adding a dog park or a small park, you understand. So
yeah.
Those are the funds we think we need based on the master plan.
Next question, fees relative to neighboring cities. I noticed that you pick a few, often compared to Berkeley and to Oakland. So I'm curious, they were not listed. Would you have had similar results?
Yeah, at the start of that fee project where we looked at user fees and we looked at impact fees, we picked our comparison cities and we picked Alameda, Concord, Dublin, Hayward, and Walnut Creek. And those are the cities that we compared to. And I just highlighted three, mostly just from a timing perspective to kind of what I could pull together quickly for you here. We haven't come here to Berkeley or Oakland.
Think that when we talk about comparator cities, when we do salaries, we pick some cities. When we pick, we're looking at rent control, we pick a different set of cities. For this, we pick yet a different set of cities. So I'm trying to reconcile when we talk about comparator cities. How, you know, where's the consistency in how we choose to compare ourselves? And that's not to be resolved right now, but it's just something that has caught my attention. And so that was the purpose of the question. I do want to ask about the inclusionary requirement. You made a reference to, at its current level of 15%, it is arguably impacting the feasibility of projects. I've heard this a number of times, and so I'm going to take that assertion as given. I haven't done any market research myself. What are we hearing that should look like? Because, as we said, a fee related to that, because there can be an in-lieu fee instead of having an inclusionary housing. I'm just trying to understand what is it that we're getting as feedback. Gee, other cities are more like X, and that would be equivalent to doing a fee of Y.
Yeah, so we do have it in our housing element work plan to evaluate our affordable housing requirement and are in the process of bringing on consultants to assist with that effort that we'll be touching over the next biennial budget. The main issue is both the percent of the households that need to be set aside for income qualified, and the level of the income. So ours for rental is a mix of very low and low income, which brings less in as, you know, other levels of like moderate, or if that makes sense. There's different income thresholds, and ours tend to be on the very low side. And we have 15%, which is a high requirement kind of as compared to the region. And we don't have a very clear specified in lieu fee option like some cities do. So when we look at the ordinance, we're going to look at that percentage, the levels of affordability, and alternative options and ways of complying.
Perfect. And I don't know if this is for you or for Tom. When we say AMI, I guess area median income?
Yes.
Is that area, does that mean the city of San Leandro, Alameda County?
Alameda County.
The entire county?
Yeah.
Thank you. Those are my questions for right now.
Yes, thank you. With regards to the inclusionary housing, that was something, because we have Assembly Bill 1505. 15% is what the city has set as a standard, is that correct?
Yes.
Perfect. That's my question.
Okay, so at this time, let's go to public comment if we've got any on this item.
Thank you, Mayor. We have not received any comment cards.
Perfect. So we'll close public comment on the item. We'll come back for some further discussion or exploration.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. You know, with regards to the updated development fees, I think, you know, with the information that was provided, I, you know, would move forth and support the staff recommendation. I think with the public art program, you know, we have a commission that does vet out the process, and, you know, I think there's a huge ask when we ask for new developments to come to the city to implement public art, whether it be on site, like what we did with OSI Soft, and the tech campus is bringing The Truth is Beauty, which is a gorgeous piece of art that I feel like needs to be, you know, art is something that the community looks forward towards, and it kind of changes the way a city feels, and I think, you know, it's very attractive. And I would support this recommendation. I think with the new the fee waiver program, the affordable housing and ADUs, I would not want to prevent development from happening. So I think looking at this and reevaluating the fees to current market conditions is something that I would like to bring forward to the council to ask for support. But, you know, I would support the recommendations by staff with regards to this. I think, you know, with regards to the current and proposed park fees, the park land acquisition and the park improvements, I think it would be a huge difference with these fees kind of being reevaluated and prioritized. So, thank you for this presentation. Great work. Thank you.
Okay, so my feedback, I'll also start with the public art program. I would describe that as a high priority. I think that other cities do it. It's kind of an expectation from the developers. I think we need to do something comparable. Coming to the updated park development impact fees. So I guess I'm struggling a little bit to understand that your $90 million impact was awfully dramatic. I'm wondering if it's as much about where we set that threshold, because it's, you know, 550 square feet, and maybe those units were 595 square feet, and so, you know, there's a huge difference for that in particular. For that, I think I know which project that is, and it's my understanding that that project had many other challenges with respect to receiving supporting funds. And so I just want to make sure that we're not being clever or cute about where we set our thresholds for something like that. For me, the bigger concern really goes to long term. When I look out 20 years, 40 years, 50, 60 years, as this area, the Bay Area, becomes increasingly dense. And it may not happen today, but if people 40, 50 years ago looked at San Leandro in the future, they'd say, oh, there's no way that San Leandro is going to be like that, right? What? We're going to have a downtown, you know, high-rise apartment building? They say you're nuts. So I think that our job is to look forward many years. And I think at the core, one of the hardest things to do after the fact in an unplanned community is acquire land, acquire space. Sometimes it's acquiring buildings and knocking them down to create park space. So I'm very sensitive to that long-term vision objective of acquiring space to create open space. Because what will happen is we will go up. And there's a huge difference between some cities in Asia where the buildings are quite tall, but there is clear, well-defined open space. You see that in a number of cities. In contrast, I could go to the city like downtown Manhattan. Maybe downtown isn't the best example. Say Manhattan is an island. There's not very much open space. And I would not want to end up like that in 50 or 100 years because the city ancestors, us, didn't take the time to say, we know where the city is going. And we want to make sure that we're setting aside money for that purpose. So that's my biggest hesitancy. And you know, when this goes to council, that's something that I'm going to voice because I think we need to be planning for the long term. I was unclear on the fee waiver. One other thought on parks. I thought Councilmember Aguilar's question around the role of the economy as opposed to the fees and the role that they're playing was very telling, because if the real challenge is market conditions and not the fees that we're charging, then I think we need to be cautious about how much hand-wringing we do over the fees that we're charging if that's not the real issue. The real issue is bringing more income to support the higher rents that cover the cost of construction. If the real issue is encouraging large employers to move here to create the demand for the housing, et cetera, it'd be like what we did with Kaiser Hospital, then I think that I want to make sure that we've got, to the extent that we make changes, I want to make sure we've got the flexibility to pivot back so that we're not leaving legally appropriate money on the table. Especially if it's not going to make that big an impact on the decision to develop. With respect to the fee waivers, could you just scroll back to that page? So maybe the one before it.
Sure thing. And we definitely can reevaluate. I would recommend once we're ready to look at our DFSI fee that we look at the whole picture again. So we're talking about fee waivers.
Questions was particularly tied to affordable and ADU. So when I think of affordable development, I think about money coming from state funds, from MDC, from any variety of organizations, nonprofits, that are supporting the specific development of this. But I also know with particularly low or very low income, is that parks are at the core. That this is a higher use population, all else being equal. And so I just want to make sure, if we're thinking, again, long term, that we're not ignoring that impact. I would argue that maybe something like streets or street signals or something like that might not be nearly as impacted because you have greater use of buses or scooters, or other non-car, multi-car households. But parks is the one place where I would say that there would be actually an impact, and that we could work with the state as we pursue grants that specifically support we're developing this type of housing. We know there'll be higher demand, and that we'd like the grant to help cover the fees that would be associated with the development of this project. Except that's even legal. I'm just kind of talking with the idea, the vision, as opposed to the logistics of how you actually make that happen. But that's the concern that I have with respect to a waiver of park fees specifically on the affordable development side. I can't tell if you're looking to comment because I want to
see your comment. Yeah, we have heard, and this wasn't the case, I would say, 10 years ago, but we've heard more recently that the affordable projects are in a very competitive environment for tax credits and for state investment. And the efficiency with which they can provide the units is a key metric in whether they receive that grant funding. And so the way they can, the more they can lower their costs and show that they can deliver X number of units for only Y investment is really helpful in then securing the financing. So by us not charging the fees, it helps in their favor have a competitive, efficient project. But if there's not a, if there isn't support for 100% waiver, I would say any percent reduction would help the equation. So I think we'll definitely look to council for that direction. But if you're thinking out loud about, you know, about a more comfortable percentage, it would be helpful to hear.
Yes, I think right now I'm not prepared to do that. But I do think that we need to be mindful of essentially ending up overbuilt with insufficient park space. For a long time, the city of San Leandro has counted in its open space the schools, which is fine in concept, but in practice, if those spaces aren't open to the public, as a practical matter, then it's not really open space. And so I think we're now in a situation where we need to address that a little bit more head on, and that's why I keep thinking about acquisition of land.
Yes, and one other thing that I should have noted is that, and I'll be sure to do this for the council meeting, is that for subdivided sites, like if you are, let's say, the Kaiser property, the 25 acres, that somebody wanted to divide that up into townhomes, they have an actual parkland obligation to provide a set-aside park that they could pay an in-lieu fee for if they didn't. And so I wanted to just mention that for some of the larger townhome developments, and for a site like Bayfair, we are expecting the private developers to set aside that open space, not that the city would need to go buy it. And I'll clarify that when we go forward as well.
Perfect. And then on the ADUs, so we've built a number of ADUs. The primary complaint that I am hearing from residents is that the ADUs are causing, in certain areas, significant parking problems. That essentially people are turning their entire lot into living space and then creating challenges for their neighbors. So I'm trying to think, because it's already, there are possibilities for people to literally bring a pre-built unit with a crane over a house and drop it onto a pad. Is there really an impediment because of the fees that we're charging? Are we really disincentivizing the construction that, at the current fees?
Anecdotally, we are disincentivizing larger ADUs, and we are incentivizing people to keep under that 750 square feet so that fees don't apply per state law. When folks hear the fees, they have sticker price, and some of our, like Fremont, for example, had waived fees on ADUs and saw a huge influx in applications after that. However, you bring up a good point. If the council doesn't want to incentivize larger ADUs, then it may not be appropriate to waive fees in that case.
Yeah, I don't really have a good sense of where the council is, but these are things that I'm thinking through. I want to come back to Council Member Aguilar if you have any further thoughts at this time.
I think with the... can you recap what the... if you know it off the top of your head, what the fee is for anything over 750 in an ADU versus under 750, what that sticker shock is? And
let me look at my computer real quick.
Okay. I just want to understand, we want to make sure, we want to give folks the opportunity to build. But, I think there are a lot that we ask for as a city, to help subsidize parks and what have you, and paying in new fees, and so I just kind of wanted to understand the what the big discrepancy is and how we can work with the community to promote and help them build.
Yeah. So for DFSI, it's only $854 per ADU. So it's not a huge amount. And then I can pull the park fee. I believe that the park fee, let's see. I thought that the park fee for ADUs was around $7,833. So about $8,000 per unit for parks and $800 per unit for DFSI. And again, we've only had 10 to 13 of these larger units over the last 3 years per year. So it's not a huge amount of revenue we're forgoing.
Okay.
Just wanted to put it out as an option since some of our other cities are doing it.
I think that's something to consider and think about. We do need more housing stock. And we talk about the REIT universe. I think that's something to consider to bring up to council. Those are my questions.
Okay, so then going back to the very last, I think, slide where you're looking for direction. I think you've got very clear direction on the art piece, right?
Yes.
The other two, the fee waiver. The fee waiver, I think you're not getting particularly clear guidance because I think we're still trying to think through, well, what are the implications? I think the overriding consideration for me on fee waivers or adjustment would be, again, Councilman Regular's question is spot on. Does it matter? Does it really matter, or is the main thing economic conditions? If it's on the margins and we want to say we've made a change to be a little bit more pro-housing, I have no problem with that. But I'm concerned about making a fundamental shift that really doesn't matter. So I'm just, that's what you hear me struggling with.
And I would say, of the items that the city controls, it matters. So we control the process, we control the development regulations, and we control the fees. Those three things matter, but do they matter enough to move the needle where someone's going to develop if the market conditions aren't favorable? No. No matter how great our process and how low our fees, we can't materialize development out of thin air, right? But they matter when people are shopping projects and looking at each city. So they do matter in our competitiveness within the region, I think.
So when I look at what I'm going to call the larger examples, when I think about that site, sort of called the Maximus site over on Alvarado, and I think of Kaiser North, and I think of the Shoreline development, really trying to wrap my head around the role that these fees are playing as any sort of impediment to development. And the sense that I get is that these fees are not the impediment to development, but you feel free to be bold and say that's not true. It is the impediment to development.
I think we have other impediments to development that these would help offset. So I think there are other material issues around the affordable housing requirement that is hard to satisfy, around, being a pro-labor environment that can be very costly for a development performa, and the fees also not being competitive layered on makes it really hard to attract development. Whereas if we start addressing the items that we can, it helps us court development and tell a story about San Leandro being a pro-housing city, a pro-development city who wants to see investment and, really demonstrate that commitment. So that's why it's important. And we also have the recent state law that says, when you do update your fees, you cannot just do a blanket unit fee anymore. You do need to have a tiered structure. And so that's another compelling reason, I think, to change the structure, but we can look at the identified fees within that new structure.
Is I think in the big picture again, they might have to look at the totality of all those pieces, and like we as a council, we should be told the full story of how all of that plays together, because I think any individual piece is probably not determinative. But when you look at all of those pieces, and so because we as a city, because our parkland, potential parkland, is directly impacted by this decision, I think we need to tell the council the full element of that. And you know, I'm a big believer that everybody should share in the pain. We need to be thinking about the role that each of those plays to some degree and trying to squeeze on those levers so that everybody contributes and not just the city of San Leandro loses future parkland. I don't have any thoughts about that.
No, I do. I think, you know, I really struggle with the trying to lower the amount of inclusionary housing. I think, you know, for me, to not have inclusionary housing is kind of like a modern-day form of redlining. You know, that's something that, I really struggle with. And I think that's, you know, the reason why the constituents put me in this seat is to advocate for dignified jobs. I mean, we're, you know, working in economic development, so who's works in construction, you know, I go back and forth with folks. And so, you know, we need to build. We need to build vertically. We need to incentivize our folks to come in. How do we do that? How do we find a happy medium to kind of, you know, have the best of both worlds? How do we, you know, develop the parcel by Kaiser to, you know, I think we've had a couple of, there was an RFP that went out, and we're trying to figure out how to get folks to come in to build into our city and working with various developers. And, you know, this is something that we need to talk about, you know, is the issue really having the inclusionary aspect part? I mean, we haven't had single family homes built in over 20 years. We just had populating, you know, and I see that. And part of being on the council is to see, you know, also folks who can't afford to live here actually put in to get a house that they, you know, otherwise would move them out to other parts of the state. So, you know, for me, it's a little challenging. We have to work a little bit harder and smarter to try to figure out how we can incentivize and promote development, because that's, you know, what I want to see. But we also need to make sure that we're having project labor agreements and working together with the unions. And so that's something that we need to kind of get pencil to paper and look at that and talk with the council and help us understand and paint that picture. Because, you know, every time I pass by Kaiser and see that open parcel, it baffles me that we have yet to build on it. And, you know, there's also the other aspect of we have approved projects, but because of construction costs, they haven't been erected. And so, and then we, you know, have other projects where it's just folks are using it as a tax shelter and also just waiting for prices of the property to increase. And it's you know, I think we need to work with folks, also make sure that we're being practical in these fees that we're implementing and developing strategy and that's working with us. I think, you know, the recommendations are something that I would support, but I think, you know, with regards to inclusionary, I could, you know, we could say, let's build a luxury high rise. But yeah, I think there are folks that would want to be able to live in there that wouldn't be able to, you know, I wouldn't want to be able to push them. I wouldn't want to give everybody an opportunity to at least have an opportunity to live in a community that they otherwise couldn't afford at market rate. So I think that's, I really struggle with that aspect. And I would, you know, hate to see us losing a project because of inclusionary housing. So that's where I stand.
Do you think that the council, or would we as a group be open to the possibility not of eliminating it? Because I don't know that there's any appetite to eliminate inclusionary housing, but in some circumstances, perhaps reducing the requirement from 15% to a lower number. Because you talked about, for instance, luxury units.
I think, you know, we can take it case by case, in the sense of this is what we're going to build, and, you know, the folks are going to, I mean, there was that option of in lieu fees. Let's say I come in, developer, I want to develop a luxury highways. Do I still have the option to pay in lieu fees, or is the ask now to have inclusionary housing on that new development?
You know, we have the alternative means and methods option within our ordinance that we can always bring to council for consideration. But the basic requirements of the code are providing the units on site. But we can certainly, you know, bring forward case by case situations to city council. And when we study the ordinance, we will bring data. So we will talk to stakeholders. It'll be a robust process. We'll bring you data to consider, so you don't have to make any decisions now. But I did want to bring it up because to a developer, all of these factors go in as inputs to the pro forma, and we're really talking about can a project pencil and attract financing. And the proposed fee rates would definitely bring us more in line. I did hear from you that you'd like to look at some additional nearby cities, so that's something that we can look at before the council meeting, and we can provide more of the whole picture so that there's context and we're not just diving right in and talking about fees. We can talk about what is the developer thinking about when they look to develop in a city, and we can list out some of the considerations. So there'll be more context. And we can talk about how we'll be looking at some of those other items in the future. I think that's a great suggestion from the committee.
Okay.
Is there other guidance that you're looking for at this time? Okay. So seeing no further request for guidance at this time, we're going to move on to general public comment for items that are not on our agenda. Do we have anybody here to comment from the public?
Mayor, we have not received any cards.
Okay, so at this point in time, I'll close the public comment and ask any final committee member comments. Seeing none, we will move to adjourn the meeting at 5:01.